And we'll move to the second case of this morning's call, which is a case number 093427, Auto Owners Insurance versus Monroe. Mr. Is it Dooley?
Dooley.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court will give me 1 second to lay some of this stuff out.
Take your time.
Thank you. Please, the court.
Counsel.
Your Honor, we are here today on behalf of Josh Monroe and his wife, asking that this court overturn a district court judgment of summary judgment and declare that the auto owner's policy allows the Monroes to collect separately from each insured that caused or contributed to the collisions that injured Joshua and Monroe. We believe this case is a straightforward interpretation of an insurance policy issued by auto owners, and we believe that the straightforward interpretation is that the policy grants multiple coverages. The first paragraph of the policy states, "The attached declarations describe the automobiles we insure and the coverages," with an S, "and limits of liability for the limits of liability you have paid a premium for. We agree to insure the described automobiles for those coverages," again with an S, "and limits of liability subject to the terms and conditions of this policy." And that's found, Your Honors, at page 89 of the appendix. The policy clearly refers to multiple coverages. That is confirmed by the fact that there are 44 separately listed in automobiles with 44 separate premiums, all of which have a different combination of coverages. There's a total premium of almost $200,000 paid for these automobiles with the varying coverages. Joshua Monroe was injured on November 6, 2006, when the truck he was driving was run into by a vehicle that was owned and operated by Wayne Wilkins Trucking. And there were three Wayne Wilkins Trucking vehicles traveling down the road together in a convoy. The second truck decided that it was going to pass the first truck. The second truck voluntarily got into the lane of travel that Joshua Monroe was heading in the opposite direction. When it saw it couldn't complete its pass safely, it tried to get back over, and it collided with with the front end of Joshua's truck. The testimony, undisputed evidence, is that it broke out the steering axle. So it would be the left front wheel and tire on Joshua Monroe's truck collided with the rear of the second Wayne Wilkins truck. That then caused the Monroe vehicle to lose control, then collide head-on with the third Wilkins truck, the third one in the row, resulting in a fiery collision, resulting in about $500,000 worth of medical bills to Mr. Monroe, and resulting into a claim for personal injury as for him, as well as a loss of consortium claim for his wife.
What tortious conduct, if any, was alleged with respect to the driver of the first or the third truck?
Driver number one, Your Honor, the conduct was alleged that he was negligent in failing to allow driver number two to pass at a point to where it was safe. The allegations in the petition, as well as the facts alleged, are adduced during the deposition testimony, was that driver number two, his nickname was Leadfoot over the CB radio, and that driver number two had attempted to pass before in an unsafe position, and that driver number two had attempted to pass in an area and actually had to pull back once before on the same trip, resulting in Mr. Monroe's injury. The testimony and the evidence was that there was an area in which driver number one could have safely pulled over and let driver number two pass. As to driver number three, Your Honor, I believe the evidence was that driver number three was following too close. Driver number three knew driver number two was unsafe. Driver number three knew that driver number two was going out in a one lane, was passing in an area where it was unsafe to pass, and he could have slowed down, Your Honor. And again, this was a motion for summary judgment. So this is a situation where you all have the same evidence that the trial court had. And so there's no deference to the trial court's fact findings or anything like that. This is all de novo review with regards to both the application of the law and the findings of fact that support it.
Well, so far in your argument, you haven't come to grips with the combined limits of liability clause in the policy,
yes,
also known as an anti-stacking provision, very common.
And it is.
And that's what this case turns on, not the coverage grants, which is where you focused your argument. There's no question that there's coverage here. The question is how this limits of liability or anti-stacking clause operates here, and that turns on whether this was one occurrence or more than one occurrence.
Correct. I believe that that is the key issue in this case, but the setup, I think we have to agree that there are multiple coverages. Then the issue becomes, is it a stacking or a non-stacking case? And I submit, Your Honor, it's not a stacking case. Stacking is when, Your Honor, where you try to take insurance on vehicles not involved in a collision and add it to the vehicle that is involved in a collision.
Not how anti-stacking provisions are interpreted.
It
clearly falls within this provision. The question is how this provision operates in this particular case.
This provision, and I take it you're referring to paragraph D of the limit of liability.
Well, I'm referring to the whole combined limit of liability clause, which has many subparts.
Right. And first, the limit of liability says the following, Your Honor. It says that we will pay damages for bodily injury or property damage up to the limit of liability stated in the declaration for this coverage. I submit to you, Your Honor, that the way to read this policy is that there is a separate grant of coverage for each vehicle and that you can't stack coverages from vehicles not involved in a collision. There were three vehicles alleged to be involved in this collision. That's what we're trying. We're not trying to take coverage.
It's controlled by subsection A of the combined limit of liability clause of the contract, which says the limit stated for each occurrence is the total amount of coverage and the most we will pay for damages because of or arising out of all bodily injury and property damage in any one occurrence. That's the operative subpart of the combined limit of liability clause. That's the anti-stacking principle.
And again, A, that section, refers to coverage. It's beyond dispute that there's multiple coverages provided by this policy.
Everybody agrees, and I'm not arguing with you about that. The case turns on whether this was a single occurrence or more than one occurrence, and so we have to... We have to go to the case law on...
On the occurrences, that's easy. That's Addison. Addison clearly says that you go to the cause test, not the effect test, or the New Jersey, which has some modified one that talks about the event test. The Addison case says you look at the number of separate separate human acts that cause or contribute to this accident.
That's what Addison says, but that's not what the court in Addison actually did.
Well, that's because
when it reached its holding.
Well, that's because in Addison, Your Honor, we had a separate sort of alleged negligence. In Addison, the negligence was that the actor failed to do something. It wasn't an affirmative act. It was a lack of action. It was the lack of securing his pond or his property so the two young boys didn't drown. It was that act. And what Addison said was, look, when you have a act, when you're complaining about the lack of action, we're going to have another test. And if we then get to the time and space test. But it's only...
The court didn't apply that either.
The court
talked a lot about the cause focus and didn't apply that principle. The court talked a lot about the time and place separation, which is an analysis that kicks in depending, according to the court, whether you have an affirmative act or an omission, but then the court didn't apply that either. And the court decided the case basically
funny.
In favor of multiple occurrences because you had two victims.
Well, actually, I think it's not a fair reading of the case, Your Honor.
I
think what happened in this case, the reason why the court did that is because the court found that the insurance company had the burden of proof, and the insurance company failed to give any evidence of whether or not they were causally related. And the court said, look, we're using the cause test. We're only going to go to the time and space test if it's a lack of action, and we can't even apply the time and space test because you, Mr. Insurance Company or Mrs. Insurance Company, failed to deduce the evidence that you needed. You didn't carry your burden of proof. So I agree with you, the case was not decided on those principles, but clearly the Addison Court says that Illinois follows the cause test. And under the cause test, you look at the separate individual actions, and it's clear in this case that driver number one, as Judge Ridley asked me about what my allegation against him was, driver number two, the allegation's clear. He was passing in an improper zone. And driver number three, we allege, for purposes of this and the evidence adduced that was given by summary judge or the depositions, was that he was following too closely and that all three of them were exceeding the speed limit at the time of the accident. Now, this case, if they were all three insured under a different policy, there would clearly be three separate coverages. The only thing that is causing the little bit of ripple here is the fact that they happen to all be insured by the same company because they were all employed by the same guy. But they were all driving separate trucks. They were all doing separate actions. And all three of them combined to cause injuries to Mr. Monroe.
If there were three different companies, three different trucks in the same line doing the same thing, all separately insured, then you would have, I guess, a separate cause of action against each truck. Is that what you're saying?
I would have separate coverages. I think I'd get one. Back to your earlier case, I got one plaintiff, one set of one injury. And they all combined, so I'd get one judgment for the amount, and they'd be joint.
You get separate judgments against each, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And in this particular case, that's clear. That's all we have. And that's what federal law requires, Judge. The federal law, as required by the mandate, is that there be a separate $750,000 per vehicle. And it's per vehicle. It has to be per accident. Because what federal law talks about is the truck could get an accident on day one of the policy and have a $750,000 limit and then drive down the road and get another accident on day two. There is a separate $750,000 worth of coverage.
It's a separate accident.
It is, and you are correct. It's a separate occurrence. But the limit is per occurrence, per vehicle, per occurrence. And we have three vehicles who combined to cause Mr. Monroe's injuries. There's no getting around that. And if each vehicle has to have a separate $750,000 limit, then at a minimum, the coverage that should be afforded here is 750 times 3.
Do you have any authority for that?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, do I have a case that says that?
Uh-huh.
No. There are no cases out there. There are cases that apply the per accident. But when you look at, Your Honor, the actual endorsement and the language of the policy, and specifically referring to page 87 of the transcript, this language is filed. It says the company's liability for the amounts provided in this endorsement apply separately to each accident, and any payment under the policy because of any one accident shall not operate to reduce the liability of the company for payment of final judgment resulting from another accident. So clearly, that talks about separate accidents. And what the next sentence says underneath the endorsement, which is part of this policy, at page 87, says the following. The liability of the company on each vehicle. Doesn't say for each accident. It says the liability of the company for each vehicle shall be the limit prescribed in 49 CFR 1040.3.2b1, governing minimum amounts of insurance, and the record is undisputed that it's $750 in this case. So when you read the plain language of the endorsement, it clearly says it's a per accident, per vehicle. You can't get it any clearer, in my opinion, than the endorsement that they chose to put in the policy, which is the liability of the company on each motor vehicle. So we submit that what should be done is that the trial court's decision should be overturned and there should be a declaration that there is $3 million worth of coverage, or in the alternative, that there is a $1 million, or $2
million. $2,225.
Thank you for doing the math. I didn't ever write it down. And I see my time is up, and I'll use the rest in rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Price.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
Dan Price from Centralia, Illinois. I come before you representing an insurance company, and as I'm sure you've gleaned, Mr. Dooley sued Wilkin and the drivers, the insured in the Southern District. That case was resolved by a payment of $900,000+ to Mr. Dooley and his client, and there was reserved the right to attempt to expand the coverage. And
that was a policy limit settlement, essentially, because the rest of the
$1
million was for property damage?
It was for different parts of property damage payments. That was what was left and remaining of the $1 million. So the company's paid $1 million total to property damage and the liability. And this declaratory judgment action was then filed in the Central District.
Why was that?
Well, I have trouble articulating why the case was ever in the Central District, the Southern District in the first instance. The actual occurrence took place in Edgar County, which would be part of the Central District. So that's – I wasn't involved in that first case, but I think that's where the whole thing should have been.
Okay.
Of course, we have contended from the very beginning that there was one occurrence as a consequence of this accident, a multi-vehicle occurrence. And since Your Honor's touched upon that, that's probably a good place to lead with, if that's acceptable. And Addison's an important case to read. I think NICOR is also an important case to read. Those cases clearly say that Illinois adopts the cause theory. But that doesn't really end the analysis. That just starts it. I would submit to you that both of those decisions very specifically say that this is a fact-intensive analysis relating very, very significantly to the underlying events. And both of those decisions cite a case that I'll pronounce it Sipkowitz. It's the one where there was two accidents with one truck 5 minutes apart. And both of them cite the Sipkowitz decision with favor. And Sipkowitz says that then the truck got in one accident, moved to another dangerous location, and in that location got in another accident. But this
separate victims of
separate
the
victims,
separate acts of negligence.
Separate acts of negligence, yes, ma'am. And the reasoning of Sipkowitz is important here because it does adopt, in the automobile context, the time and space analysis that Mr. Dooley was referring to in Addison. We have that in our brief and have the, I think it's on page 18, the language that, says that if the cause and result are so simultaneous or so closely linked in time and space as to be considered by the average person as one event, then for insurance policy purposes, they are one occurrence. And if we look at what happened in this accident with truck 1, truck 2, and truck 3 all going down the road, and Mr. Monroe's truck being out of control and very significantly never regaining control and careening into the third vehicle that is a quarter of a mile away, and that's the third Wilkins truck. Your average person would look at that event and consider it to be one multi-vehicle collision. And that's how I would respectfully assert it should be interpreted for purposes of Illinois law, consistent with the Sipkowitz decision, as it has been applied in both NICOR and Addison. Now, I've struggled with the notion about the three vehicles, and it's obviously frustrated Mr. Dooley as well, because what he sees is if you had truck 1 on Interstate 70, truck 2 on Interstate 57, and truck 3 on Interstate 64 having separate accidents, well, there'd be separate coverage for each of those. And the interpretation would be entirely different. But as you look at what constitutes an occurrence, and these are all in the same accident, well, then, the coverage applies separately, with one major exception that he has not been willing to recognize, and I understand it's difficult, because in the severability clause it says, except with respect to our limit of liability, coverage is applied separately. There's nothing confusing or ambiguous about that. That is how the coverage is applied, which takes us to the combined limit of liability provision. And that is a provision that combines bodily injury and property damage. And at the same time, it has this subparagraph D that's been mentioned. And it very specifically says in the last subparagraph of that, that the limit that's articulated is the maximum that they will pay no matter how many automobiles are involved in the occurrence. And automobiles is used consistently throughout that subparagraph. It says it doesn't matter how many automobiles are on the declarations page or automobiles involved in the occurrence. So does that violate any public policy? Not been asserted that it does, and I don't know how it would. There's $1 million coverage for one occurrence. An occurrence is the operative term, definition, that determines whether there is more or less coverage than that. And that has been the position that Judge Baker adopted. I believe it to be correct, and I think it's supported by Illinois law. Judge Sykes mentioned at the very beginning a concept that I think is important, and we put it out in the brief with the question of stacking. This isn't a true stacking case in the sense that you're trying to lump limits onto one vehicle. What you're trying to do is say that the anti-stacking provision is inoperative and doesn't allow the policy to be applied as written. It's not ambiguous. There's nothing that's ambiguous about it. It's just a kind of an unusual factual situation. And there's $1 million owed and $1 million that's been paid. The MCS 90 is another unusual component of this case. Yeah, I think it was last year this court issued the Karpov decision. And that's just like almost all the other cases that you can find about this. It's one vehicle and multiple claimants. But each and every time a court's addressed it, to the best of my knowledge, when more than $750,000 has been paid, that's the end of it. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's paid to one person or it's paid in an interpleader of some sort. If that happens in one accident, and it has a definition that's very similar to the occurrence definition in the insurance policy. I think Judge Baker called it the functional equivalent of the same thing. So I think that rises on a similar, analysis, if you will, that there's one accident here. But if there's one accident, then Mr. and Mrs. Monroe have been paid $900,000, and that's a sum of money in excess of the minimum federally mandated security of $750,000. The purpose of the MCS 90 has been fulfilled. And I haven't found it interpreted per vehicle in any court that's looked at it. It's always interpreted like it was in Karpov by this court, per accident. And there's no reason that I can see to deviate from that in the court's interpretation of this this policy. I think those are the main points that I wanted to cover. Back to the occurrence question for one second, if I could. I look at NICOR, which is, factually different. Addison, of course, with the two dead children is factually different. But let's say that NICOR, when there was one mercury spill, that someone were to allege that three different workmen were negligent and contributed to the single mercury spill, and not the hundreds of spills over many years. Would that constitute three occurrences because of a single spill? I don't think so. I don't think that's what the court suggests when they talk about this each independent intervening human act, as that term is used in Addison when they adopt the Doria decision. I would say this is all viewed by your average person as one single multi-vehicle occurrence, and because of that, it is considered one occurrence, the same repeated exposure as the definition is in the policy, for insurance policy purposes. And unless there's something the court would want me to address, I will sit down. I would ask you to affirm Judge Baker, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Mr. Dooley, you have 1 minute.
Your Honor, this case is not NICOR, and counsel's example is wrong. NICOR clearly said that you look at the affirmative acts of negligence, and in NICOR, the court determined there were separate human acts for the spill. The difference in his analogy, the significant difference in this case, is that there are three separate vehicles that each have separate insurance. And as counsel said, this is not a stacking case. And as counsel said, we agree that the limits of liability, this is not a stacking case, and it's not that limit of liability that applies. It's whether or not there were multiple occurrences, and there were multiple human acts that led to Mr. Monroe's injuries. There were three vehicles, each of which had $1 million worth of insurance. And if Judge Baker's opinion is affirmed, then what you all are declaring is that two of them had no insurance. There is no other way around this. If you find there is $1 million worth of coverage and three vehicles involved, then that means two had no insurance. That is not what that policy provided. Thank you for your attention.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.